Are you holding off on buying a new home because you're waiting for mortgage interest rates to drop? At Hall Financial, they already have. Not only does Hall Financial offer the lowest fees and best rates, but now Hall Financial will give you a 1% reduction on your interest rate the first year of your mortgage for free. Why pay more for your mortgage when you don't have to? This is more than a rate cut, it's a gift. Imagine saving nearly $2,000 in the first year alone on your monthly payments. If you're buying a home and not taking advantage of their Easy Start program, you're overpaying. Are you ready to step into your new home with an initial rate in the fives? Give them a call at 866-CALL-HALL or chat with them online at Call Hall First. Start your new year with a gift from our friends at Hall Financial. And the Hall Financial hotline is also wide open.
Yeah.
I believe we have Wayne Kramer on the horn. Hey, Wayne, it's hey. Mark's here, Drew's here, Trudy's here. What are you up to, Wayne?
Hail, hail, the gang's all here.
All right. Absolutely. And we've been trying to get a hold of you for a while, really since I heard about the Hard Stuff coming out, being a longtime fan of the MC5. And you're playing this weekend, too, so we got a lot of reasons to talk to you. The Ann Arbor Blues Festival. You're playing with that crazy John Sinclair who we had on the show yesterday, and the Blues Scholars. And Don Was is going to play with you guys?
Yeah, we're all Blues Scholars.
I made the mistake of asking John if there was any rehearsal, and he laughed about that.
It's practice, it's blues.
Yeah, if you're a Blues Scholar, you don't rehearse.
Yeah.
But you always study.
Well, I won't ask him that again. Hey, the book is out, right?
Yeah, it came out yesterday.
The Hard Stuff.
Or day before yesterday, actually.
Okay. And I got to tell you, I've always been so interested in this band because it was such a it was such a shooting star, and I wasn't old enough to really appreciate it. I was really 9 years old or 8 years old when you guys started. But moving to Detroit in 91 to work at WRIF and then being here all this time and just being a student of rock and roll, I really am fascinated with the MC5. And I'm not even sure where to start. I wonder what ended this band so fast because you guys had so much in the ball. Were the politics significant in terms of making the MC5 run short?
It was part of it. You know, most bands get together, a bunch of young people, they share a vision, they work real hard, they learn to play their instruments, they write songs, they make records, they achieve some recognition, and then they break up. That's the track for almost any band. And that was the track of the MC5, except we had the added pressure of the FBI, the Justice Department, heavy, heavy criticism from the establishment, and from our own colleagues on the left in the revolution. So we got hammered from all sides.
And you were so young. You weren't even 20 when you started that band, right?
Yeah, and we know today that you don't even have an adult functioning brain at 20.
Yeah, even less functioning now, it seems. Now, you guys were...
True.
I read this today, Wayne, and I don't even know if I believe it. Were you guys on the cover of Rolling Stone before you had a recording out?
That's true as well. Yeah, they sent a reporter out to hang out with us for a few days, and the guy was so green, he had never smoked a joint.
Really?
And, you know, we smoked reefer nonstop, so he got all smoked up and went back and wrote the story that was like a cartoon, a caricature of the band.
Was that Hunter Thompson, and then his career was launched from meeting
you guys? That's a great story. I wish that was true.
I'm trying to figure out, though, was it the White Panther connection with John Sinclair? Was that why they would... I'm trying to figure out, why would they put someone on the cover who didn't have a record out?
Because we were a band from this unglamorous place called Detroit, a manufacturing industrial city in the Midwest where everybody in California and New York thought nothing hip could happen. Huh. Yet, We were packing in 2,000-3,000 kids a night when we played at the Grandy Ballroom, and people loved the band. People were passionate about what we were doing, and they couldn't figure it out. And being a news organization or semi-news organization, they sent a reporter out to get the story.
Drugs also were a problem with the MC5, but it seems like most bands survived drugs. But was that a big part of the end of the MC5? Were you unable to survive drugs, unlike so many other bands? Well, a lot of bands went down because of drugs, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. There's a high attrition rate when you combine drugs and artists.
Sure.
I think that. We championed marijuana, which we know today is a relatively benign substance compared to other drugs, alcohol or tobacco or speed or cocaine or heroin. But hard drugs only entered the picture at the end of the band, and I think they were more of, certainly, you know, when you're in active opiate addiction, you have a problem. And we, you know, some of us had that. I can only really speak for myself. I had that problem. But using opiates was a way to really kill the pain. My problem was, you know, I couldn't make the world do what I wanted it to do.
Yeah.
Couldn't bend the universe?
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't make everything go the way I wanted it to. You know, I lost my best friends, I lost my job, I lost my standing in the community, and these added up to be a terrific pain. And, you know, these medicines are designed to be painkillers, and they do that fine. The trouble is they carry with them horrific side effects.
Wayne, there's an excerpt of the book. I think the Detroit News put out a real short excerpt, and it's a story about you selling to support the habit, and you tell the story of where a guy mentioned that they were going to kill you and just steal the cocaine. My question about that is that you mentioned that you were high on a shipment of high-grade heroin, and when a guy tells you that, oh, the other night we were going to kill you and steal the cocaine, does that sober you up really quick, or does the heroin just numb even that major revelation?
No, that ruined my high.
Yeah, I would think so. I would hope so.
That harshed your mellow.
Bummer, man.
That was a bummer.
What a wild story. And I thought it was interesting, too, though. You were never scared of the police when you're doing those big drug deals.
Well, of course I was afraid of the police. I mean, that's always in the back of your mind. You know, you're committing a serious felony here, and that's always in the back of your mind.
The Hard Stuff by Wayne Kramer. You had the huge fall, and I wanted to mention some things later on because I've always been fascinated that you played with Johnny Thunders, and I don't know a lot about it. What kind of shape was Johnny in? Because Johnny had some problems, but you were kind of picking yourself back up by then, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a terrible miscalculation on my part. I in my grandiosity, I thought that I could fix him. That the power of the music would save the day. And, of course, I was completely deluded. That was a very unwise move. We ultimately decided that the band's motto was we snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Was the chemistry good with you and Johnny?
I'm sorry?
Was the chemistry good with you and Johnny, though? I mean, playing, there must have been something there.
Well, he was capable of great charm when he wanted something from you.
Yeah.
And, we could play. He could play the guitar. He had a sound, and he was a talented songwriter. He had some good ideas, and he was an incredibly charismatic live performer. So, you know, that's part of why I thought it would work. Me and the rhythm section could hold the music together, and he could stagger around on stage and be the, you know, rock anti-hero. And I thought, this is great. This is dramatic. This will work. But, of course, it never can work because the people that are suffering addiction, they already have another job that's more important.
Right. Well, he was a fascinating guy to watch on those old YouTube videos because, again, that's a guy I didn't get to see a lot. But and I love your videos. I got to tell you, the MC5 videos were just fantastic. That band was really fun to look at and watch, and different and unique. And I don't know, maybe ahead of their time. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Wayne, when you look back on those videos? Because I watched the documentary too, and I love that documentary. I thought it was, I know it's not available because of legal reasons, but it's just, I don't know, that band can really get me excited watching these 50-year-old videos.
Well, no legal reasons for me. I'm not blocking that film. You know, I settled my dispute with them 10 years ago. So I'm not stopping the movie.
So who is?
You'll have to ask someone that knows about it. I'm not involved in it. I don't know anything about it. I never had a problem with the movie itself. I always thought the movie was kind of charming. My problem was with the filmmakers, not the film.
Did you feel like it showed the band in the proper light?
Well, yeah, I think the movie is a love poem, but I was always kind of disappointed that it never explored the two most interesting aspects of the MC5, which were our politics and our substance abuse.
Hmm. Wow, you're complaining about that.
How did you leave those two out?
Yeah, I mean, those are the most fascinating parts.
Well, I was
the
more...
fact that the White Panther wiretapping case led directly to the downfall of Richard Nixon, I think, is a fairly interesting story.
Absolutely. I was just really wanting to know more about the music myself, and I really don't know that much about that part of it. And the drug use was really, it was very brief. It was really hard to watch, though, the end, the shows in Europe. But I thought it was cool. It seemed like a lot was documented. Wasn't one of the guys in the band, a film student in high school? And so he shot a lot of stuff? Is that Michael Davis?
In the MC5?
Yeah.
No. Thinking of Lenny Sinclair.
Okay.
Well, yeah, she was a filmmaker from the beginning of the early days when we first hooked up with John Sinclair, and she's the one that shot a lot of that great footage.
Yeah, there was a lot of, I mean, for going that far back, I thought there was some really nice footage.
Regarding movies, you do a lot of, work with films, scoring them, soundtracks, doing music for them. And I noticed there's a theme lately because you did Talladega Nights, The Big Short, Eastbound and Down, which are all Adam McKay, Will Ferrell type stuff. How did you get hooked up with them? And are you really tight with those guys?
Yeah, I am. Adam's one of my best friends.
How'd you meet him? How'd you get hooked up with him?
Hal Wilner was the music supervisor on Talladega Nights, and they wanted to have hard, aggressive rock music for the race scenes. You know, these are NASCAR racing. Mm-hmm. And they had another composer on the film, but he couldn't rock. he was good with the orchestra, but, the rock sounded like bad movie rock. Oh. And so Hal said, why don't we call Wayne Kramer? You know, he's pretty good at aggressive guitar rock.
Damn right.
So I went over and met with him and saw the footage, and I said, yeah, I'd be happy to do this for you. And it began a great friendship.
It just reminded me, you just played with STP, didn't you?
Yeah, recently I played a few shows with them.
How was that?
Terrific. Oh, they're a great band. Really enjoyed working with them.
And Johnny Depp was on. Johnny Depp, too?
The singer is a Detroiter, you know.
Yeah, Jeff Goot. We had him on. Absolutely. Good guy.
Yeah, good man.
Can Johnny Depp play?
No.
No. Okay.
But he looks the part.
Yeah, he did.
He looks great.
That's half the battle, apparently.
We're talking to Wayne Kramer from the great MC5. Hard Stuff is the book. And let's see. G.G. Allen. Now, I read somewhere in there about G.G. Allen. I don't know how much you cover that in the book, but what was that connection? I just know him from the Toilet Rockers and some of the craziness. How did you get hooked up with G.G.?
Well, you know, people call me from time to time to play guitar on their recording sessions. I am a professional musician and a session musician. And these guys called, the producer called me and asked me if I'd come over to the studio and play on some tracks. And when I met him, he was just a very enthusiastic young man, very spirited, loved his band and loved the songs he was writing, and he was very excited to have me play on his stuff, and it was a completely pleasant experience. He had not yet evolved into the bizarre scatological performance artist that he became later.
Okay.
Evolved.
With the Hall of Fame, you guys have
choice
been,
word.
Yeah, evolved. Absolutely. With the Hall of Fame nominations for the MC5, which is fantastic, except for the fact that not actually getting in, which it seems it's a matter of time, is that something you would have ever imagined after the short run you guys had and the you know, as down in the dumps as things got for you personally in the 70s? Did you ever foresee, boy, one of these days the MC5 are going to get bigger and bigger and we're going to get our due? Did you see that coming at all?
No, and I still don't see it coming, especially considering that, you know, the people that run the Rock Hall are the same people that kicked the MC5 out of the music business.
Yeah. Well, sounds like John Sinclair yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't see it happening, but, you know, listen, you know, it's always nice to be recognized for your work, and if such a thing was to happen, I think it would bestow some honor on Rob Tyner and Fred Smith and Michael Davis and, of course, Dennis Thompson. You know, these guys worked really hard in the MC5 to do what we did. And so, you know, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Well, it seems
I'm not holding my breath.
It just seems like as time goes on, the band gets more recognized as opposed to more forgotten. I don't know. Am I crazy?
The fans carry the torch for you.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah, it only took 50 years.
Yeah. Slow build there.
Going back to the book and reading up on some of the reviews, there's a mention that you lost your virginity at age 10 to the babysitter, but they didn't tell us how old the babysitter was. Do you care to divulge that?
Yeah, I think she was 16.
Wow.
And
that's a serious part of the book that I wanted to address. To, you know, that's child abuse. And so, you know, I add that up with the fact that I had an abusive stepfather, and, you know, how did that imprint on a child's brain? And did that show up later in my life with the quantity of promiscuity that I participated in as a young man in a rock band? I mean, we laugh about it. We make jokes about groupies and all that. But this is aberrated behavior. You know, this is not what we would call normal or average or healthy behavior, this kind of the degree and the amount of casual sex that I participated in. And you know, I think, you know, I wanted to talk about these things honestly and openly with the hopes that, you know, maybe somebody else doesn't have to follow this path.
You say that's child abuse, but in the write-up that I was reading said that you set up the rendezvous with the babysitter. Is that not correct?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Oh, but you
did. Yes, I did. I mean, that, you know, you've heard the expression, you know, if children ran the world, they'd destroy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what did I know? I was 10 years old.
Somehow I can't picture having the balls to do that when I was 10.
Literally, yeah.
Or, well, yeah, that too. Well, Wayne, I got to tell you, it's been a long time coming. We really hadn't had a chance to talk, and when this book came out, I was hoping we would, and the MC50 coming around too.
Listen, always happy to talk with you guys and connect with all my mainline mellows out there in the D.
You got it, Wayne.
Thanks.
Thanks for the time. It's great talking to you.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
All right, Wayne Kramer.
The hard stuff.
I can't wait to read this book. Just reading the reviews on it.
Yeah, digs in deep.
What'd you say, Charlie?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, thanks,
sorry,
Charlie.
Repeat it.
It was a really good interview.
He's a cool guy.
Is he?
What a story.
Well adjusted, too. Jeez.
I know. He's dedicated to narking on himself quite a bit.
That's the kind of book we like.
It's a truth. Yeah, there's some truth there.
I was going to ask you about the wiretaps. Do you know much about the wiretaps? Because he said that wasn't covered in the documentary, and I'm not really all that familiar with that, bringing down the Nixon administration.
Yeah, the direct link. Yeah, I'm not aware of it either. Get the book.
Does that have to do with, because didn't the White Panthers get busted for, I wanted to ask John about blowing up the CIA building in Ann Arbor, or attempting to?
Oh.
Is that why they wiretapped them?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track there. It's a fascinating period, and, you know, who's the God? Who's the gay guy from Elektra? Is it Danny Goldberg who signed the MC5? He was sent by Elektra to sign the MC5, and Iggy and the Stooges were opening for him, and so he called back to Elektra and said, "I want to sign this other band too, this baby band." And so he's like, "Okay, I'll give you $5,000." So he offered Iggy and the Stooges $5,000, MC5 $20,000, signed them both the same day. Hmm. Not bad.
Is it wow. Danny Fields?
Danny Fields. Danny Fields.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is he gay?
Oh, I didn't look that
I know
part
this
up.
Guy's gay.
It doesn't how you say know that him? He is.
Yeah. Well, I saw the documentary. Oh. It's Danny. I'm pretty sure it's Danny Fields. I think he...
Yeah, he was the one that signed the, all
he was
the, guys.
The Doors manager for a while.
Signed the Ramones, too.
Yeah.
Or managed the Ramones, I'm sorry.
Pretty seminal figure.
And a big deal, yeah.
I did fold over a few pages in this book. I was pouring through this book so fast, I couldn't even highlight stuff. I was just really enjoying the read. And again, the title is The Hard Stuff by Wayne Kramer. Part of what I thought was so cool about this book is that Wayne was so young when he found Rob Tyner and Fred Sonic Smith, and the MC5 are really rolling. These guys are teenagers. I mean, MC5 are over. He's 23, and oh, they're boy. Over. They've gone through contracts with Elektra Records and Atlantic Records, and they're done. But it was interesting reading about Wayne in. I like the way he's very honest.
Yeah.
He wasn't always.
Well, I mean, now, why not?
I know. But he's really pretty hard on himself when he gets to the end of his rope with liquor and heroin. It's like, I'm a bad friend. I'm a bad husband. I've destroyed everything in my path, and I'm going to turn it around. And he really has, you know, to his credit.
In those years that he was broke that you were talking about, besides playing with Johnny Thunders, did he have a 9-to-5-ish job?
Yes, what did he do? Made cabinets.
Really?
He made cabinets, then he built custom homes. But he, as he put it, I was working, I was building things for rich people.
Yeah.
So, you know, that
really
almost
wouldn't fit with his aesthetic in a way.
I think he was very serious about it, and he liked the work, but I think he felt like, you know, this is bullshit. I'm a rock star.
Yeah.
I should have some money. And, you know, I looked him up in Celebrity Net Worth. He's worth $17 million now, wow. According to Celebrity Net Worth, because he's optioned all these MC5 songs for movies, and they finally got their royalties straight. And even that was messy because...
Well, he's not spending it on certain things either.
Give him his due!
Well, no, that's true. Like I got to tell you, a funny part, though, was he was in New York... living in some place for like $175 a week. And it was basically just playing with whoever he could play with to make enough money to buy heroin, you know, to play another gig, to make a few bucks, to buy more heroin. And you could get heroin for $10 a fix at some walk-up in New York where literally there'd be 100 people in line.
Oh,
and it was
cool.
A guarantee. You never had to worry about getting it.
Must be a good product.
Yeah, I think it was.
He
liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a long line for it. And they never got busted.
You should be selling it for more.
You're right. Yeah, lower it, shorten the line.
Exactly.
Anyway, the point was, when he got to New York, he was really broke, and he was, you know, this is the part that I think is just incredible to think about. He's so broke that, you know, he can't even keep himself in heroin a lot of times, even when he's touring with bands, and so he has to, like, detox and do gigs at the same time.
Oh, my
God. He'd
go
through these three or four horrible days on a tour.
When
things were really not looking good, he figured out who the office was that, you know, had the produced the payouts for their music, and he went in there and goes, I'm Wayne Kramer from the MC5, and I haven't gotten a check for a long time. And I thought that was hilarious. And they sent him out the door with like a $400 check.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much all he wanted at the time anyway.
Yeah, no, I know, as if. I mean, I think that's one of those parties where both parties were very happy with the transaction.
Yeah, couldn't you see the executive that just when that secretary came, he's just write a check for $400 and he'll be on his way.
It's like he just needs some drugs.
Yeah.
So then he pulled that a few other times, and I think when they finally did start to straighten the royalties out, he had to Michael Davis and Dennis Thompson and probably Rob Tyner's estate and maybe Fred Sonic Smith. Wayne wasn't able to get any money for a while because I think he'd been kind of getting their money for a long time.
Oh, really?
Well, there was a little imbalance there somewhere because Wayne would actually bother to try and collect it once in a while, and the other guys didn't. Wayne was really the, sort of the driving force.
Did he
band.
Say, well, they didn't want it?
No, I think at that point he was making amends.
Or did he say, did he lie and say that he was going to split it with the guys when he got it?
I don't think they cared, and I don't think he cared. And, you know, those guys had, they had a pretty rough go, too. But, yeah, you know, and it's Russ Gibb, of course, and WABX, and, you know, Detroit. There's so much Detroit in here. But when you go, you know, when MC5 is completely off their ass, they're touring with him and Fred Sonic Smith and three other people in Europe. And the shows are so bad that people are canceling shows.
Oh, God.
You know, and they're a pretty big act by then.
What year was this?
That was 73, I think. And so he comes back to Detroit, and he's just, you know, he's a drug-addled 23-year-old, 24-year-old, and it's over. He's doing B&Es. He's doing
B&Es. That's right, because he got busted.
And, yeah, and fencing property.
Yeah,
and he's selling drugs, which he's doing, you know, he said first it's like, you know, sell four bags of heroin, do one. Sell three, do two. Do three, sell two. You know, and he said for some reason that equation just never worked out because he was going to sell drugs to make enough money to make a demo and get to 8x10s and, you know, get some new clothes and all that. And it just never quite worked out.
It's not the best business model.
Yeah, if you're doing the drugs, it just doesn't seem to work out for most people. So, yeah, and he's fencing stuff. You know, people are bringing him stolen property and he's fencing it. And he eventually got busted and went to prison. And one of the other MC5 was in the same prison he was in.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was Michael Davis. I can't remember, but oh my God, what a story.
Disaster.
And then he gets out and he's, you know, immediately not right back into that. He's into drugs, but oh my God, it's just an amazing reclamation story. Did you know thousands of our listeners have already called Legacy Partners to get help with their home and auto insurance needs? We get emails from you all the time singing their praises. Legacy has even helped listeners by fixing mistakes other agents have made, asking the right questions to get the right coverage put in place to properly protect you and help save you money at the same time. And chances are, if you haven't checked your rates in the last year, you're paying too much. So what are you waiting for? Put some money back in your own pocket. Give Legacy Partners a chance to help with your home, your cars, your life, or business insurance. And if you're on Medicare, take advantage of the annual open enrollment period and let Legacy's Medicare team review your option plans for free. Call them today, Legacy Partners, 586-209-4106, or visit our website and click the link to get started with your new quotes.